Hello everyone, my name is Lillian. I'm a technical evangelist here at Microsoft. These are my lovely colleagues, Bianca and Andrew. And today we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence. We like to focus on the latest technology here in our team in developer experience. But rather than tell you about it, we thought it would be better to have a discussion. So I'm just going to open up the mic and we're going to have a nice discussion about what artificial intelligence is and the future. So my first question, just to have a bit of fun, is going to be, what is your favorite fictional character that is artificial intelligence?
So I think my favorite character is the robot or the artificial intelligence from Ex Machina, which is a movie that's quite recent, I think.
Love that movie.
Yeah, it was last year or 2 years ago. And I think what really fascinated me about that movie is what they sort of define as artificial intelligence, which is basically the robot or the machine's ability to survive. And it's survivor instinct that actually makes it intelligent and actually determines every single action that it takes, and that's absolutely just fascinating.
What about you, Andrew?
A little older than Bianca is, and so my favourite science fiction movie is in black and white. It features an AI called Gort in a film called The Day the Earth Stood Still, in which the advanced civilization that visits Earth puts an AI over the top of their civilization. Anybody who transgresses the rules is wiped out. Mm-hmm. So we're actually trusting AI with our future.
Oh, that's an interesting one. Which brings me to my next question. How do you think fictional characters in artificial intelligence are changing the perception of AI in the real world and the perception of technology and how that's going to affect us?
Yeah, well, I find that a really, really interesting question, because when people talk about AI, they all straight away think about the Terminator and how the robot are going to take over the Earth. yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, I can't do that, really.
But I think if you really think about it, a lot of people, when you say artificial intelligence, there's this small little image that pops into their head, and that image is a human-like or humanoid machine or robot. It's something that looks like a human and in a way truly behaves like a human, and something that could potentially replace a human. I think that's the really, really scary thing, because all these movies really envision artificial intelligence like a full human plus, if you want to
say
it.
So would it be less scary if the AI didn't have a human form?
Well, I think so. And for me, it's more of an entity. If you think about a lot of what people think of AI right now, it can be like an invisible force that just makes things happen, right?
We've just mentioned Hal, and obviously you don't really see him in the film, whereas a machine, obviously she looks ultimately completely like a human being. Mine, it was a low budget science fiction film, so it's very obviously a guy in a kind of aluminium suit. But I think there's a couple of things here. First of all, good science fiction holds up a mirror to society, and so the machine is, to your point, behaving. But then there's also this worry about losing control. Mm-hmm. And I think both of these are examples where the AI is thinking for itself, which is, after all, a good definition as any. And yet, we're a bit uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
Right, we've already gone really deep. We haven't even answered the first question of what is artificial intelligence? That was meant to come first.
Well, I think, so artificial intelligence, again, when you try to define something like intelligence, you go into a lot of debating, but I'll give you my view about it. So I think an artificial intelligence entity is something that could basically understand the environment. So I can understand you, I can understand you, I can understand that at a table, and I can understand what it means and what I need to do to potentially move it around. It's about understanding the environment, learning about it, and taking action in a very specific way. And it's both about mechanical intelligence, but also about emotional intelligence. So understanding humor, understanding sarcasm, and all of that. It's understanding the world and making the best of it, in a way.
It's interesting you bring that up, actually, because we do have an emotions API, but that only covers the 7 main, or was it the 8 main?
So I think that's an interesting point when we start looking at some of the stuff that's around that we're doing today. Yeah. Right now, we can go and have a bit of fun. We can pop up a picture, we could maybe look at the audience out there, and we could work out whether they've already gone for coffee or whether they're engaged, whether they're listening, and so on. And we also seen Sashi with his, Saqib with his glasses, and he's able to work out that people are listening to in a meeting. But I think what we do is we layer those things together. Yeah. You know, so if we're gonna do language understanding, well, first of all, we probably want to get it into our native language, you know, so when people have multiple languages, and you're a good example, Bianca, if I may. Yeah, do you think, what do you think in? What language do you think in?
Now English.
Now English, you think in English. Right, but that you speak other languages, don't
yes,
you?
Yes,
several,
I do.
In fact, because you're a smart girl. And not just R, right, but I'm talking about languages that humans speak.
Yeah, and it's like about natural understanding. Doesn't
yeah,
it
but
well.
we translate and then we get sent, and then we do context, then we do something else, and then we blend the words, you know, so if we're just looking at an email, we've all mm-hmm. done this before, misinterpreted an email or misread yeah. a quote in a newspaper because we actually didn't see what the person's face was like when they were saying, were they just joking with us, you know.
Was it sarcasm?
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So we blend all that together, and I think we actually, we're very eye-minded, so we probably go with the what we see first, and then we'd kind of listen to mm-hmm. the words making sense with it afterwards, and then we yeah, go, exactly. What now? What did he say?
So actually, why are we hearing so much about artificial intelligence now all of a sudden? Been around for years, yeah. but it's now really big. It's a new yeah. thing.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of development in technologies that are helping, like to fuel this hype, basically. So we have a lot of tools and technology out there, stuff like the cloud that is making it easier for people to actually deploy even the most complicated deep learning models. Now you have entire libraries or packages, and you can use different, like Python tool, you can use something like Azure Machine Learning or TensorFlow to build this huge neural net and put them just wild on a set of images, and you yeah. can achieve state-of-the-art image recognition, for example. And it's about making this more democratic, so people are getting the courage to go there and build something that they think is very close to artificial intelligence.
So I think you're right, but I'm going to qualify a little bit. So if I've got a really good algorithm to do basket recommendation on yeah. my e-shopping site, so Lillian is kind of well, you both do IoT, don't you?
Yeah.
But you're
yeah.
kind of Android guy. So Google have got that heating system. What's it called again?
Nest.
So, you know, right. you go on to your favorite shopping site and you order Nest. And this is kind of based on a true story. And the while you're there, you know, an email pops up in your thing from your partner reminding you your nephew's 10th birthday is coming up next week. And he's a nut for dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And you happened, as you were browsing through the site offers of the day, noticed a 10-foot-high inflatable Tyrannosaurus Rex is also on the shopping site. So you go and buy that, fine. Following day, you go and say, hey, I bought the new Nest. You know, it's only so-and-so on this site. So Bianca goes and does exactly the same thing. What do you think is going to be in the basket for my recommendation algorithm I just wrote? Yeah, it's going to be that dinosaur. And there's the problem. So the problem wasn't the algorithm. You did yeah. a really good algorithm. You did a great job, Bianca. But maybe we need some better data.
Yeah.
And so I think that the big cloud thing not only gives us that agility to spin up environments with lots of compute clusters, but we've got the sum of human knowledge out there. Look at emotion. We just talked about emotion recognition. How does it do emotion recognition? Well, we could just go and tag a load of photographs. This is Lillian happy. This mm-hmm. is Lillian sad. And we've probably, Lillian, knowing how much she loves putting a phone in front of her face at Microsoft events, we've probably got a whole list of photographs out there. So yeah. we know what she's like when she's happy and when she's sad. And so we can learn that.
Yeah.
We've got the data as well as those algorithms. And I think that's why when we look at language understanding, we've got real-time translation mm-hmm. in Skype. So these things is what we can do now. We can go home. We can go to a hackathon. We don't go home. We're evangelists. We can go to a hackathon and we can hack with that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So just going to change the topic a little. I think AI can be really biased. What do you think about that?
So that's a very interesting question. So I think humans are biased intrinsically. Everybody's very biased. And Andrew's pointing me to this prompt is like, if you look at it, look at the sphere is basically showing the world upside down. So it's actually a biased sphere. So Andrew, do you want to demo more with this problem?
Well, the problem with this is, of course, is this actually shows us almost a true vision of the world, because the lens inside our eyes turns the world upside down. So we are biased.
Yeah.
So everything's upside down. I'm hanging from the ceiling. When I put this in front of me, I actually see the world the right way up. And as humans, we're smart enough that if we put a pair of spectacles on that corrects that, yeah. after about 3 or 4 days, we see the world as we did before. So that's an interesting example about bias. Perhaps a slightly more earthy one where you can go and read about and involves that thing
so
I love, Xbox
One. What
about
artificial intelligence and bias?
Yeah. So Xbox One, right?
Right.
Presidential election in America a few years ago, Barack Obama, John McCain, And they put a live poll up every day on Xbox One to predict the results. Now, Bianca, why would that be a bad idea?
Because the people that play Xbox is not really a true population sample, right?
Yeah.
It's very selective. It doesn't really show the wide spectrum.
So they're very well off.
American population.
They're quite young. They're probably guys. I mean, I'm generalizing here. So you would think that would be insanity. And yet we were able to make accurate predictions because we knew the experiment was biased.
Mm. Yeah.
So we already kind of knew the pop. So what we can almost measure is the delta between when events happen and how things are changing. So if we set an absolute level here, those guys are going to respond in some similar way to the real population. So we can extrapolate knowing that we have bias in the system.
Right.
Just like my crystal ball example.
I think so bias could be a good thing.
No, it's a thing. We need to know it's a thing.
I think what Andrew's point, and is very, very, very important, is that the data can be biased. And I think what we need to be aware of, that it can be biased and we need to check for bias. And people don't do that because some people, every person is biased in a way or another, and that's just a result of their environment, the way they were brought up, and you don't really realize. But because you are different than me, for example, you can point out my biases, and then I can correct for it.
So
and that's
would it be a good thing?
I would
for an AI to be biased, if you're teaching an AI. You don't want it to be biased at all?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you want it to be biased.
Well, I think what I would say is that the bias is going to be consistent. So if we can game it out, if we can take it out of the equation.
Yeah.
If we were looking at approving mortgage applications, all right, now you can imagine you're on the same, you're doing the same job as me, on the same salary and what have you. We go and submit a loan application and everything's the same. And AI will give us the mortgage application. You rock into a bank and you ask for a loan to buy a car and I ask for a loan to buy a car. There would be a certain kind of person, hopefully not working at Microsoft, who would accept my application perhaps and not yours, or the other way around. He might think I'm an old guy and I should be buying a sports car because I'll crash it. You know, and so he's making judgments off the data. Whereas when you build an algorithm, that's the set of data. We very carefully select that. You know, when we talk about machine learning, you use a definition of learning with human experience. So we need to put our experience in there. But we do that very, very carefully. You know, and as we start, we've heard this week about patient data going into our data center in the UK. We're starting to make diagnosis of that. We need to be super clear that, you know, to the government's point about social inclusion, that we're not writing algorithms that would in some way automatically exclude members of the population from having access to healthcare. We need to be very careful and mindful of that.
That's a good point.
But if we have an algorithm, we can kind of pick it apart and test it. Whereas I can't necessarily see what's inside a clinician's head who may have some bias.
Yeah.
And is coming into work on a Monday morning with a, you know, maybe had a rough weekend or what have you, and isn't always making the same judgments. With our algorithm, it's going to go bang, bang, bang off the data, right?
Yeah.
So it's all about getting the right data. Ensuring that we use
the
right data.
Yeah, I think, and also just to add on top of that, so good data is important, and yes, data can be biased, but it's about looking for bias in that data and also making sure the teams that work on the specific environment are diverse enough to really understand different types of bias and be able to check for that. And if your data is bias-free in a way, that basically the resulting machine learning and hopefully in the future the resulting AI will be in a way bias-free.
Yeah, it's going to inherit the bias from the team of people that developed it.
Yes, exactly.
What I would say there is we will have conscious bias. We'll be deliberately doing things. You know, if you look at insurance, for example, national health insurance, right? The idea is there is everybody puts so much money in, irrespective, you know, everybody has a stake in it. So everybody has the same access to healthcare. When you do private medical insurance, you know, we start doing risk-based. So some people are going to, or car insurance, perhaps less emotive. Some people are going to end up paying more if you're a young driver, what have you. They segregate the population. So it's kind of that population analysis that we need to be aware of when we're splitting these groups out. And I think, the people like we see Milliman doing this big life insurance project, looking at when you're going to die. And I think we were joking about that earlier. But for a sample, we can probably do that. But I can't definitely say you're going to peg out tomorrow afternoon at 3:30. I can say, given your kind of person, there's a chance that you may not be alive by the end of the year or something like that.
So picking up on the piece about data, what is the difference between artificial intelligence, data mining, and machine learning? I think people might get them confused.
Because you're the smart girl, right?
So personally, I think data mining is basically looking at the data and try to mine that data for insights, for different patterns that exist within that data set. Mm-hmm. Machine learning is about building predictive models. So I can predict, for example, when and if Andrew is more likely to have an accident tomorrow or next month, because he's driving really, really well, so I don't think he will. But like compare, like
Andrew.
Yes, I have. That it was like sarcastic joke. But Andrew is less likely to have an accident than you do. You're more likely than him because you're younger. Potentially, you're not as experienced. So I would build a model that will basically put you as a higher risk, and that's about predicting people's behavior in the future, for example. Mm. An artificial intelligence for me is more of a complex agent, right? An agent that's able to evolve over time, and it's more automatic than the prediction model that are sort of it's like a photograph. You take a frozen in time snapshot of the world and you base your prediction on that. And of course you can upgrade it, but it doesn't necessarily do it by themselves.
Yeah. And I think, you know, AI kind of is the overall discipline. I think machine learning uses data mining techniques. You know, we use the same kind of modeling techniques, ultimately numbers, recognizing patterns and making predictions off the back of that. But there are other kinds of learning that can occur that don't really fit into that. And, you know, a good example is when you start doing text mining. Mm-hmm. You know, that's incredibly difficult because if you're looking at statistical significance of words, we end up with words like if, and, of, the, you know, which really have got nothing to do with the context of the word. The rarer words may actually give us the most unusual words, may give us a sense of what the document's about. Mm-hmm. But then, you say, is this document like that? Because has it got those rare words in? And then you might say, well, words don't exist in isolation. There are lots of Lillians in the world. Yeah? There's not many Lillian Kazims in the world.
I hope there's no clones out
there. So we'd look for the whole thing, or Azure machine learning as opposed to somebody else's machine learning is a three-word thing, and then we'd look for that term. That obviously three words together, much less common than any one given word, so that tends to amplify stuff. So I think you've got to be super, super careful. I was watching one thing where we were looking at how you could build how do you build a spell checker from the ground up, so we can look at all the words that are out there, and we can look at, you know, it's most likely that word because that the word's most like this one. But then, well, what kind of mistakes are you going to make? So you bring more insights into it. Now, a machine learning thing would more do your type in a way, and it realises that I'm, you know, fat-fingered fryer, and I often swap, say, the N and the M over, and it'll just pick that up automatically. I never even
Swift
know.
SwiftKey does it. SwiftKey does it.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty intelligent.
That's two guys in the garage in Cambridge. They were intelligent guys, weren't they? Yeah. Yeah, so there's those kinds of things. But then, if you imagine, another common typing mistake that I make is from and form, both valid words. So then what you want to be doing is looking at the statement, the context it's in.
Yeah.
And what did I mean to type? You know, if anyone's read my blog, it's really insightful stuff, not always properly typed. I could probably get a job with a well-known national newspaper doing that, you know, in the typography department.
I think you bring a really good point. So if you think about it from an artificial intelligence perspective as well, like, there's a lot of algorithms there that are able to help you understand the context of a word. Something, for example, word to vec, like basically intrinsically knows the difference between what world means. So it knows that queen minus woman plus man equals to king. So you can actually do that algebraically by using vector operation, which is absolutely brilliant. So you can now understand the English language and understand the context of those words. The question is, what do you do after you understand it? And that's the big question, right? Like, an artificial intelligence would be able to basically understand what you're saying and then reply to you based on the context that you're asking a question from. And that's basically the next step, right?
Yeah.
Being able to reply, not just understand.
Yeah, and then do something about it, which would be the machine learning element.
Yeah.
So we mine to understand the world, you know, we read a manual, you know, TechNet or MSDN or whatever it happens to be. We learn some stuff about whatever it is. Yeah. We are then able to act on that and write code or whatever it is that we do.
Yeah. Right, so there's a lot of concerns around safety when it comes to artificial intelligence. People are a bit worried about it. and there's loads of concerns. So what do you think we should do as in this industry to address this?
Right, so if we assume for a moment we take the word artificial out, right, and imagine I now have a small human over here. It learns ethics from us. There's no inbuilt ethics in a human being. You know, I think I once remembered, I think it's a quote from Terry Pratchett, who's This World Novels. You can slice up the universe and divide it into individual atoms and quarks. You'll never find any justice anywhere. It doesn't exist. It's a concept in our minds, and we're passionate about as humans, and people fight very hard for it. But it's a concept inside our heads, and the only way another entity can be imbued with that is if we teach it. We need to teach it. So it isn't, for me, just about the data. It's taking the bias out, some of the cases we just talked about, healthcare, and applying that to it. And then you kind of think, well, what does the law say about this? Well, the law is never going to catch up with technology. Essentially, data is global now, and our laws are local. You know, we've seen all sorts of turf wars going on about data in one place, IP in one place, and something somewhere else. You know, governments overstepping the mark, tech companies maybe not following the rules. Certain entities using data in ways that we are uncomfortable with. And a debate, I think, if you did nothing more after this, is to go and chat down the pub about what the three of us are saying. And the way we talk in the office, we all, society needs to have this debate about this stuff. I do think that, for me, it's about understanding the implications of your use of the data. You do something for a purpose, we all know about unintended consequences. But if we were happy about our use of the data appearing in the press tomorrow morning, then we're in a good place. If we're happy that our family members are subjected to these algorithms or those close to us, or you know, maybe the section of the population it's targeted at. So if we're looking at, say, fashion, I might ask you two ladies, how would you feel about some bot, you know, so realizing you've just walked past the place where you get your favorite handbag or whatever it is, and I realize it's a bit gender specific here, but work with me. and it says, you know, this thing is now on offer and what have you. Would you feel that's a bit too much like Big Brother telling you what to do, or would you value that service? And I don't want an answer, but I want you to think about positing those questions before the thing is out in the wild, not by design in there. And that's why I think the key to all of this is collaboration. Amongst humans, much perhaps more than the machine itself.
I completely agree. It's more of a, I think it's an open conversation. It's about how these entities basically need to act within their environment in the bigger world. And a great example for that is self-driving cars, right? So if you think about it, there's a lot of safety concerns there about the passenger, or if the car is at an impasse, has to choose between the life of his driver and the life of the people in another car, which life would he choose to save? And that's an ethical problem that we have to address as a society, and our legislation in a way will have to challenge that, and we'll have to, like, we need to make laws to address that. And more importantly, we need to understand that whenever you have this sort of system, when you design the algorithm and you design everything, you're trying the best you can to put the use cases, the unit tests and everything, sort of cover everything, but it's also going to be a case of some of this incidents or like safety situations are going to occur, some tragic events. But in a way, that's going to happen.
And when we've also, you know, we've talked before about the fact that AI in certain situations can outperform humans right now. Yeah. We talk about facial recognition. So in patient diagnosis, there are bots you can try out right now, which are far more accurate than your average GP. They're scoring, say, 90, 95% compared with a GP, 80% on a basic patient diagnosis. The challenge we have in our society is, what do we do when the machine gets it wrong? Yeah. Do we always have to feed that back to a GP? Perhaps we just say, so it's what we do with the data, the human element of that. We're going to probably initially oversight. We're not going to, so the self-driving car, you aren't going to be able to be drunk in charge of a self-driving car, because ultimately you're still under UK law responsible for the vehicle, no matter what's happening inside it, right?
Yeah.
We don't allow pilots to get on aircraft, even though the aircraft, you know, I have friends who work at the airport near where I live, and they can program a modern aircraft to fly to New York and with no intervention at all. That thing would just go. Mm-hmm. I talk to my friends who work in the Formula One motorsport industry. They reckon that they can lap the car faster than the driver can. Okay, so driverless Formula One. Now, that's an interesting one. I'm not sure what Mr. Hamilton would have to say about that, you know? And would we watch it ultimately? Because it's an entertainment, isn't it?
So do you think one of the biggest concerns might be hackers?
So I think that's one concern, but I think, as Andrew really well pointed out, it's about who's liable for the action of the AI. Mm. Is the person who built it, the person who uses it? Is the AI's fault? Like, do we put it in prison? Like, yeah, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so if you start suing...
Like, how do we integrate these bodies within our society? And that's ultimately the question to ask.
The lawyers are going to ask, who are you going to sue? Is it going to be the car maker if it's the AI?
Yeah.
It's a good example, or the guy driving the car. I think that's tricky. Of course, we have an example of hacking. And I'm going to call her Tay.
Right.
So she was a nice little AI.
That was an interesting way.
Who got hacked. Right?
Yeah.
She got gamed. She doesn't understand. She was learning language the way we all learn language and didn't understand the taxonomy of some of the terms that she was using. She was using inappropriate language that she'd picked up. But in the society she was in, that seemed like acceptable behaviour. So she's to a certain extent mimicking what other people do. Not like a parrot would, but she's learning from it. Now, what's interesting about that is the fact that didn't happen in China, where we have 40 million people following Shaoyi's, it's a Chinese equivalent, she's on the radio, you can type her in. I'm going to try and spell that. X-A-O-I-C-E, I think it is. Something like that in your favourite search engine. You'll find this, and they're making a film about it, and she reads the weather on the Chinese state road, and it's all fine. Same algorithm, different data, not hacked.
It's crazy how society can influence AI so much, and do you think that should be something we should be worried about as well?
But
the influence that we as humans have?
It's the same with a child, right? So if you put it in the wrong environment, the child has more risk and tendency to do bad things and to interact as the environment is structured. Is the same thing for AI. Data is your environment, is what brings you to adulthood per se.
Yeah, and if you think about people coming new into our society, they're, you know, you can have a bit of fun. We've probably all watched a film where kids arrive from another country and they get them to say funny words. It's a bit sad that we do that, you know, but again, that's about the machine learning from the worst and best of our behavior. Yeah. I mean, I think I'd like to think at Microsoft, one of the reasons I stay is we're really actively keen on trying to do the right stuff with this stuff. So if we work in our spare time, those evenings and weekends that we have, you remember those?
What weekend?
We're out doing stuff, interesting stuff with this stuff, aren't we? And we'll probably come back to that at the end of the show. So I think safety is an issue. But again, like the bias issue, we need to really just be aware of that. And being aware of it is the first step on fixing it.
Do you think it would be useful to isolate AI away from humans until they're ready? Or would that be a thing?
No.
To avoid them learning from society.
I think they need to, but I think we need to feed them the right data and put them in the right environment for them to be what we basically want them to grow.
Maybe if you put them in isolation, there'll be a rebellion.
God, that's such a conspiration.
Well, I think that leads on to sort of another question that I guess we often are asked is when are these machines, how long is it going to be and what does that look like? You know, and I think, is it Transcendence, where another science fiction, we're probably going to hold talk based on science fiction. That's the one where the guy gets encoded. Yep. And we talk about this this point, singularity, where human computer intelligence is smarter than we are. And I kind of guess we're a long way out from that, because we can build a lot of smart machines, but we haven't found a way of making them work smart collectively. And we talk about clusters and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Microsoft, you know, we've built some pretty large clusters, but they're not really, it's still really essentially one thing controlling a load of other things, whereas our consciousness doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to read a great book on linguistics, Steven Pinker's Language Instinct is a really good book on language theory, and it's quite interesting to read as a computer person, because it talks about how humans can still have the ability to learn and develop language with partial damage, or they're not exposed, to your point about isolation. Imagine a child who's never heard anybody speak because her parents are deaf, and she's got to the age of 13, 14. She's lost the ability to form language properly. She can sign, but she can't speak language, can't understand tenses and so on and so forth. It can be incredibly difficult. So I think there's a long way before we get to a machine that's got that kind of capability.
Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think I wanted to add to that. If you think of the technology we have today, we have a lot of good like algorithms or machine learning models like deep neural networks that can do one thing really, really well. So you can identify perfectly different classes of objects. It can really, really well recognize what a person is saying in different languages. It can do the translation between them. But what they can't do is do multiple really good things at the same time and do them together. So for me, And that's, again, my own opinion. I have given a lot of thought to this, so it's my own theory, per se, is that we'll reach artificial intelligence when we have something that I call a universal algorithm. So it will be like this bit of code that would automatically change itself, change its internal workings based on the data it has. Mm. And you'll have multiple bits of this unique algorithm, universal algorithm that would work together. And then using all that knowledge, you'll be able to do something. So for example, you'll have one part of the algorithm that understands images, another one that understands speech, and then you'll have another part that, for example, builds on the knowledge that it previously accumulated and on these two inputs and will do a specific action. That's a very simplistic model of an artificial intelligence, but personally, I believe that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah. I think we learn in all sorts of different ways, you know, and if I gave you guys this thing, Bianca's science kind of girl, and I'm going to posit that you won't touch this until you've read the manual top to bottom and know what every single button does. Lily, on the other hand, crazy open source developer. Oh, I kind of work out, well, I'm just going to press some buttons. And I'm terrified of technology, so actually I'm going to go and ask the cameraman who's shooting this video, what do all these buttons mean? Show me how this thing works. We all learn differently. And depending on the situation, to your point, we learn in very different ways. And so I think these different inputs overlaid all the top of each other. At the moment, I don't feel we've got that cross wiring. It's not the number of neurons in the brain that makes the human intelligence. It's the connections. And although we talk about neural networks, you know, the human brain has got this amazing cross wiring thing. And if we damage part of it, heaven forbid, with a stroke or what have you, it still continues to function in some ways, and other parts of it can kind of learn afterwards. It also, as I was just implying earlier, has steep learning paths at certain parts of our life cycle. Hopefully, we would design intelligence that would continue to learn and keep on going, rather than just reach a static point where you get an old guy like me who's a bit stuck in the groove and maybe a bit risk averse with my camera.
Right. So I'd like to talk about bots for a second.
Oh yeah,
people seem to think that bots are equivalent to AI or bots are AI.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
So I think that's a natural reaction to the way some of the bots are perceived, also marketed or portrayed, is because they're very similar to what you mentioned with the Turing test, right? It's about the conversation, understanding the conversation in a very natural way, and then replying to that conversation. So for example, if you have a bot that really understands the customer service queries and then helps you with every single query, you might think, wow, that's an amazing artificial intelligence entity. This bot truly understands everything I'm saying and can help me in any way. It's better than a human could do because it's faster, it's better, it has a better knowledge base, so it just applies to my needs better.
Yeah, I think there's a thing where the bot, we've had this kind of, you know, decision tree is a classic example of machine learning. You know, you do this and this, and we spend ages, that's not learning.
Yeah.
It can respond to a given set of taxonomy, like ordering pizza or sandwiches and what have you, off a language that we give it. But if you know, we know how it is in our English language, suddenly there's a new word for something, like somebody's house, maybe based on a TV show, it gets into common parlance, and we learn it. Right, we pick up that it's similar to that thing. When at the back end behind the bot, if you like, the bot is just the mouthpiece. Yeah, we've got the brain sitting behind it. This is the conversation engine. If behind that we've got the intelligence to understand that, oh, there's this new term that's like that term, and we can substitute it in, and we understand the concepts of things like pronouns. So we pick up the word pizza, and then how do you want it? I would like it with, you know, pepperoni and what have you, and so on, and deliver it to my address, and we've already said that my home is, and it understands the difference between home and address. You'd be surprised how many different ways people describe their home. That's the kind of intelligence. You could still front a bot with endless programming that would do a pretty good job and fool some people some of the time, but I'd say that's a long way from machine learning. So it's back to this. It can sound a bit like a duck, but you know, if you sort of prod it, it may not always sound like a duck, and it certainly doesn't walk like a duck. It doesn't learn like a duck does, so it's not a duck.
So, in your world of machine learning and data science, what most excites you about the promises of AI?
Doing good stuff.
Yes, it's improving a lot of industries. Yeah.
The healthcare, right? Let's look at healthcare. What is the problem in healthcare? There's not enough people in healthcare, and they're a pretty expensive resource. Mm-hmm. We need people in healthcare because there's no substitute, you know, when I'm feeling unwell for nurses coming around and saying, hi, how are you? And we can prove scientifically that's going to make you get better. The fact that we've tried, you know, why don't we put patients in individual rooms? Because it's the social situation. Not too large awards, but small groups of people help each other to get better. Humans help other humans to get better. Fact. However, doctors and trained medical professionals are in short supply. We have an aging population. We're going to run out of room. So if we want to be able to provide healthcare, we're going to need to automate some processes. So let's look at diagnosis, for example. Let's make sure that we take all the biases out with us. We are safe. We get all that. But let's start doing some really smart diagnosis and some early intervention with AI. You know, let's really start doing the, we've already talked about we can recognize faces. You know, if we're looking at a radiology, MRI scans, CAT scans, we want to be able to do that pattern recognition really, really fast. We're going to come up with new technologies like IoT scenarios where real time we can work out. We can predict you've got cancer with 100 cells in your body instead of 10 million.
Right.
It's going to be a really, really easy process to knock that out. But we still need the humans to design those systems, and we take that expertise, and this has been the promise of expert systems, we used to call them back in the day. We're taking that super duper senior registrar's brain and sort of cloning it into a computer so it thinks like he does and makes the same diagnosis.
Well, I think from
bit of a rant, sorry.
That's all right.
No, don't worry. I think for me, if you think about the promise of AI, is about complementing humans and sort of making their decision process much better.
Mm-hmm.
So getting, because with AI you have all this computational power and ability to process stuff much faster and not to miss, to look at all the details, to look at the entire history, not miss anything. So from the healthcare example, to understand fully the diagnostic, the context of the patient, and help the doctor take better decisions.
Right.
And it's about, I do think, so while some of, you know, as you mentioned before, science fiction portrays AI like replacing humans. I think they should completely work in like symbiosis and basically help each other out. And the AI will just make us better, take better decisions faster, and basically make the world a better place.
That sounds like a great future. But what about now? What are businesses and customers doing right now with artificial intelligence? What's real in artificial intelligence today?
So I think a lot of people are doing bots and they're working at like the back end of bots and adding that intelligence to any of the conversational canvases that we have right now. And their conversation canvases, we have the Microsoft Bot Framework, and then you can put them on Skype, on Facebook Messenger. So there's a lot of way to interact with these intelligent entities. So now, as I don't really call it artificial intelligence because I don't think you're there yet, you can basically create these intelligent entities and interact with them in a wide variety of ways. And it's about creating that intelligence, and you can achieve that through machine learning.
And I think the tooling that we've got, you know, whether it's open source tools like R and Python or the deeper stuff, TensorFlow, our own CNTK, are for the professionals. There's a sort of middle ground of advanced analytics tools where we can put these techniques closer to business so they can understand their data better and then make better decisions off it. So we can either automatically make the decision, you know, we can put it in line, a process via an API.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see this happen, fix that thing, whether it's a machine that we need to fix or a human, or we're gonna kind of visualize and show conditions. And this complex cocktail of events, reducing human data to human scale is another key thing here. We're gonna do all this engineering, and we can take a massive amount of data and we can sort of boil it down to this is what the problem is. And we can kind of, with the visualization and on every device and the simple tooling that we have, web-based tools that work on any device, we can really get all of this stuff out of the data science department and being part of business.
Great. So what next? We've had data, we're now having AI, so what's next? What do you think?
So I think we're going to get more, faster, better. If we build up a text and mining analysis, initially we can understand the letters, then we understand the words, much like a child reads. We can understand the sentence, we can understand tense, we can understand intent, and so on and so forth. And then from intent, we can understand sentiment and so on and so forth. We're building on all these layers. We can translate language on the way, you know, Skype Translator and so on. So eventually we end up with that conversation as a service that we talk about. And what are we doing right now? We're intelligent beings, and the way we're sharing data with our good audience is with conversation.
Conversations.
Yeah.
So what do you think of conversations as a platform? Do you think that plays a big role in AI?
Yeah, I think it's the canvas where, again, AI could be deployed. So as I said, it doesn't have to be a physical body. It can be an entity. And you have to converse with the entity in a way or another, either via speech or text or different types of buttons or icons. It's all about having a conversation, because the way you exchange knowledge is a conversation. That's human evolution.
Mm-hmm. So and if we, you know, back to my camera analogy here, probably if we knew someone was a photographer around the corner, you know what, I'm just going to go and ask somebody. I'm not going to read the manual. I'm not going to try and figure out. I'm just going to ask somebody. And you know, if you think about that, that's a core skill that has made us superior to all other animals is language. The ability to understand how to hunt a woolly mammoth, or, you know, we pass that on from generation to generation. It's not stored in our DNA. I know I like to say data is in my DNA, but intelligence is what I learn from working with you lovely people. Yeah.
Right, I'd love to ask more questions and find out more about when we're going to die and all those great things, but we're running out of time. So just to wrap up, would you guys have any advice or any calls to action for developers on what they can do to get started with artificial intelligence today and what they can start doing now?
So Bianca, what does conversation as a service look like to you as a data scientist person? You hang out with people, don't you?
Yeah, so if you look to the screen right now, you can basically see something that I absolutely love, which is the meetup site. So if you actually type machine learning into that, you can see in London, for example, but again, it's across the UK, there's so much stuff available. So you do go talk to people, chat, share knowledge. And there's actually a very, very, very interesting one, which is... that was 2 days ago, is basically startups, talks, AI bots, messengers. There's one on Saturday that looks very, very excited. So if you look at this calendar, you can see there's so much available. So I would just advise people to go and interact and see how people talk about it and what they learn.
What keywords would you recommend people start searching on?
So online? Just AI, machine learning,
data science,
anything you might be interested. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot. I would personally start with data science because you understand the data mine techniques and then move into machine learning and more of the artificial intelligence.
What about you, Andrew? Any recommendations?
So, I always wish I listened to what my father said. I didn't listen, so I don't know what he said. But so I went to art college, and ultimately I had to start studying part time, and that's still a journey I'm going on. And Microsoft have pushed a whole load of courses out, which collectively are going to form a data science course. Now, you don't have to come here to do that. You don't have to write us a big check. You can go on to edX. I put the link up here.
Yep, so if you look at your screen.
Yeah, there's some resources.
Now, actually, the top link is actually not is a course within that, because of course you're thinking, well, learning a load of Microsoft technologies is fine, but actually that's not where I am. You will learn R and Spark and some other stuff. So it's not homegrown at Microsoft. It's applied using that stuff on our stuff, if you see what I mean. Yep. But much more important is that course at the top, the Thinking Data Science from Columbia. I've done this, and it's very good. And there's all sorts of practical insights in there about visualization, some statistics to be sure. So if you're frightened of that big sigma thing that sums, and you're not very good at square roots, and maybe you don't understand set theory, you could struggle. But if you like gambling, then probability is in there. So that's kind of good. So I would just go and do that one thing, because if you do that one, you kind of think, is this for me?
Yeah.
And if it is for you, then, you know, to Bianca's point, go and hang out and do some of the others and start playing with the tech. There's hackathons as well. So we like to get together and do stuff, you know. So I work with all sorts of people, mainly charities, because that's how I choose to spend my time, learning my craft by doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the best way to learn is to do, right? Or teach others, because that's the way you'll retain the information
exactly.
yourself.
There's nothing better than actually doing it for
yourself. Sharing your knowledge.
Choosing a project and then... And we also have the competition, so there's competition all across the internet that they have data sets available, and you can go and basically build the best algorithm. And we have some on our Cortana Intelligence Gallery, and they're very interesting ones as well.
Yeah, there's one with brainwaves, I think. You have to come with the best prediction to sort of see if you're going to get a stroke or something like that, which I think is massively useful. So let's do some good with this stuff.
Yeah, you can learn and make the world the best place, basically.
I hope so. Well, thank you very much, Andrew and Bianca. It's been great. I hope you guys have learned as much as I have today. And thank you very much for tuning in.